Episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B, and we are recording on a Wednesday afternoon, June 17th, and this has been, or this will be, one of the first recordings that I've not done live, so this should be interesting. I can do what I want and say what I want and sweat as much as I want, and you guys won't have to see that, so should be good for me. My guest today is Dave Sobel with MSP Radio. I know you recognize the name from the past, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. He is my guest today, and we're going to have a nice little chat about several different topics. And let's look at some housekeeping stuff. I think the first thing I need to discuss and get out of the way is down here in South Florida, if you ever have to use the words Miami and Comcast in the same sentence, you're probably not going to have a good day. So I had to drive down to Miami today. And for those of you that don't know the demographics down here, I live in Fort Lauderdale. It's about half an hour to 45 minutes to the city of Miami. I am doing some sub work for a company out of Massachusetts. This is their first week back after being quarantined for COVID-19. They are splitting the office half and half. So half of the people are working now. The other half will work next week, and they do that week on, week off sort of thing. Well, one of the things that they're doing is they are getting an additional backup internet. And they have a fiber connection right now that runs between their Miami and their Boston office. And they're getting Comcast as a backup. And for the last 18 months, they have struggled with getting this done. And so last month, they actually were able to get the fiber installed and demarked, but it was installed to the wrong place. So I had to meet Comcast there this morning. They were supposed to move it from the demarked location, which is in a closet in the conference room, and move that into the server room, which is literally one wall over. But the gentleman there said, oh, we can't do that because the service loop was cut and we don't have enough fiber, so we're going to have to re-splice the fiber. Can you come back tomorrow? So I'm like, I'll have to rearrange my schedule, drive to Miami yet again, and that's not even the end of it. Once they do the move, I still have to come back because down in Miami, just because the fiber's installed, well, we now have to install the appliance to get the service actually going, which is called the Sienna, and that's installed by another person. So I have now had to deal with three different Comcast people to do one internet connection, and it has just been a joy. So that is that was my day this morning. And then on another note, and this is going to be on the personal side, and I'm going to get it out of the way early in the show, so that way, if you want to listen to the rest of the show, you'll listen through this and go through. So on my way back, I was listening to another podcast, and the topic that came up was, of course, race relations and diversity. And I know that if you've heard me in the last couple of weeks, I've made a couple of comments on it. It's something that I can't ignore. I hope that those of you out there listening to the show, I hope that you're not ignoring it either. We're already dealing with situations where people are tired of hearing about it. Just so you know, I'm tired too, but I live it. And it's not going to go away for me, and it really should not go away for the rest of us. But one of the things that came up is the lady was talking, and I should preface by saying that she is white, but she was talking to one of her black friends, and they got onto the topic that is probably going to be a bigger topic down the road, but it just struck me today that they were talking about having comfortable conversations, and the topic got to that it is now the responsibility of us as black people to make the conversation comfortable for white people. And I don't know my thoughts on that, except that I was not happy when I first heard it. I'm just going to throw that out here, and I'm going to do this every now and then just to let you guys know that this is the stuff that I think about, and hopefully we'll have some good discussions on it later, but just needed to let that be known that that was my thought process today. So now we're going to get back to tech. And I do want to, I think I had an email that I was going to read. Let me make sure that I don't forget an email, because I've done that to you people. And I want to apologize when I do that. And let's see, I've got a podcasting deal, grow your business with online coaching, bagpipes ringtone. Well, can't find it now, so we're just going to move on with the show. Does that work for you, Dave?
It totally works for me, Marvin.
Maybe I'll find it a little bit later as we're perusing around. But so let's move on to Dave Sobel with MSP Radio. Also has a couple of podcasts out there, of one of which we'll be talking today, called The Business of Tech. And I mentioned that you've heard his name before because he's been on here before. He has been in the IT industry for quite some time, ran an MSP for a while. Moved on to a couple of other companies, was big with SolarWinds, which is the last time we talked, but now is out doing content creation and stirring up thoughts and things IT.
That's the vision there, Marvin. That's what I'm trying to do. And thank you for sharing. I think you're right to bring up, you know, that these are conversations that are ongoing and we need to have. And I think that, and thank you for bringing that up, because I think that's important for us to do ongoing. I wanted to just sort of add my thinking on this too, because I've been giving a lot of thought to it as well, is this: I'm not comfortable with those statements about comfort, because I've been trying to think about the idea of comfort as a luxury that I have had. I'm a white guy, so you have to acknowledge that by saying, and I focus on that because I like to focus on that level of uncomfortableness, because I've had the ability to put it aside. And that's the important difference. That is the very definition of having the ability to put that aside, is a privilege I have that those in the African American, the Black community don't have. And the fact that I can't put it aside because we're having the conversation, that's not necessarily a bad thing. We'll have those conversations ongoing, but I wanted to just acknowledge, thank you for bringing it up.
All right, sounds good. Yep.
But yeah, I was at SolarWinds through October of last year. You had me on before, and I come from the IT space, and having these interesting conversations was the mission that I set out to do next. I said, you know, I spent a bunch of time as a solution provider. I spent a bunch of time as a vendor. I feel like I've learned a ton, but I want to have more interesting conversations, and I want to have more of these.
You mean things. You don't want to talk antivirus removal or pricing or.
I'm so over it. and I guess I'll say, like, besides the I'm burnout on it personally, I don't feel like I'm adding anything. It's well-trod space, and there's tons. If you want to have a consultant that talks about those things, there's armies of them, right? There's plenty of channel chiefs and vendors and solution providers and panels. I could be one more guy doing that, or I could try and take on something else.
Right.
And
right.
For me, that's the idea of, as I looked and said, where's other spaces that I could add some real value, that I could do something different? And that's the idea behind launching some podcasts, doing it in a way that, you know, I laugh going to me in a microphone in my basement, starting this, but want to channel these conversations in new ways.
All right. Well, you know what? We need all these types of conversations, and it's a fine line to walk sometimes, because I know I'm there. I've been doing this, 23 years now with my company. I've been in the industry longer, but, you know, having conversations over and over, it's good for new people to have the benefit of old people like us to, you know, share our wisdom and give them, you know, pointers and tips, and don't fall into these traps like I did and things of that nature. But at the same time, there are situations where I'm sitting with somebody and I've known them for years, and I'm like, you and I are still having this conversation. And right. Some of it's related to the fact that, you know, maybe our business didn't go the way we wanted it to, or something's changed in the industry. Happens all the time. But you're right. We need to have bigger conversations around IT.
Yeah, and there's a space for all of that. So, I mean, like, for example, if you and I were consulting on our businesses and kind of acting as holding one another accountable, yeah, I totally want to get into that nitty-gritty. But, you know, do I need to sit on yet another panel talking about how to price your services or how to take this offering to market? Not really. Like, I'm not adding value. So for me, it's around exploring ideas about us as a maturing industry. Technology has been around 40, 50 years. We've been doing, I mean, guys like you and I, right? We've got 20 plus years of experience. That means our industry has matured, and there's issues. There's new stuff coming along around regulation and around the way that the industry is being managed and our perception at the table. You know, you can talk about what's happening now. It's clearly put technology like right in the forefront. Well, if we want to be treated the same way that, say, you know, lawyers and doctors and accountants are from that professionalism standpoint, as an industry, we have to grapple with some questions of growing up that we can't wait for the vendors to do it for us. We can't wait for the, you know, for it to happen to us. We need to start driving that ourselves and get involved. You know, there's some interesting threats as we move from, a lot of technology is now commoditizing. And we've got threats that are coming from below where you have to differentiate yourself. We talk all the time about adding business value. But unless we start moving into these complicated issues of how are we going to approach the rest of the industries in terms of engagement, unless we grapple with them, we're going to get swept up.
So let me ask you this. I know that we talked about, you know, when we first met about you moving from MSP into the vendor space, and now yep. you've moved out of both the vendor space and the MSP space. Are these types of thoughts and questions things that have always been in your mind, or is it just something that kind of started happening a little while ago and you thought it was time to make a move?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
So I love it. I've been thinking about regulation in our space for a decade. I mean, I can recall conversations I've had with the CEO of vendors I've worked with saying, like, I think regulation's coming. I think the space is going to happen. And he'd look at me and say, yeah, you know, mate, you're probably right, but that doesn't help my bottom line. Okay. Yeah, he's right. But if I keep putting my solution provider hat on, at some point I'm going to have to wrestle with this.
Right.
You know, I laugh and go, I bought the MSP radio domain like over a decade ago, just because I was like, at some point I'm going to want to do something here. So I've percolated on those ideas, but the impetus for me, my time at SolarWinds, I learned a ton. I loved helping partners. I loved being engaged, but I knew it. I felt the same way that when I left my MSP, saying like that ran its course. Like I did that. I want to pivot and do something else. And so that for me was the like, okay, well, what is it? Well, you know what? I've been complaining about some of these issues not getting attention and not focus. I could complain about it a lot more, or I could roll up my sleeves and I could start doing something about it. You know, and I'm actually really sensitive to the fact that in many cases, these conversations almost need to be driven by an independent voice, by a media voice, because of the conflicting nature of being an MSP or being a vendor or being a distributor. You know, Marvin, I'll use you as an example, right? You've got an IT business. At times, you may not be able to shake your fist angrily at a vendor because you need them too.
That is true. Yep.
Right? So you need them too. But I can shake my fist at them. Like I can poll and start asking these questions. And that's what media organizations generally do, right? Is they ask tough questions and they look for answers and they look to have those conversations. And for me, that was the big challenge, was the, can I do that? Can I pivot to that and make it work?
Right. Now, the question is that, you know, there are organizations that from the outside looking in, they will have these conversations at conferences where they'll have panel discussions and, you know, they'll send out surveys and stuff. But I know that there are times where I'm like, you know what? I've never seen anything come out of it. And, you know, us as IT providers, we really can't yell, like you just said, So, right. And then the question becomes, how do we hold organizations, you know, accountable to do the change that we need to keep our businesses going?
Yeah. And for me, the first bit is that we recognize we have to have these conversations, right? That's the, and in some cases, particularly when I think about regulation and some of those bits, we haven't really addressed that, particularly if we're talking about the, you know, the typical solution provider is sub $5 million in revenue. We've not really had conversations about the impact of regulation or the way that we can start looking to our professional associations to start driving that change. We haven't had that conversation. We can start there, right? And by just even acknowledging and exploring the problems and understanding the trends and starting figuring out the ways that we can get involved, that's where it starts. And so for me, it was about the like, well, okay, we've got to start the conversations. We've got to have a platform around it. That's where I'll start my efforts and asking and exploring the questions of who are the people that are going to be taking this on? How are we going to do it? Who's interested, right? That's some of what I'm out there doing. And it's interesting to find as I continue to put forth, you know, I do a couple of podcasts, I do some video series, I've been doing a bunch of stuff. It's really interesting and exciting to see the swell of people going, yeah, Dave, you're saying stuff I want to think about. You're saying stuff that's challenging ideas. Like that momentum is really picking up, and that's exciting to see happen. From my perspective, that's the first start. And then we start looking to empower people to take that to the next level, to take that knowledge into action.
Okay. And we will get into a couple of those. But before we do, I want to ask you, can you describe the overall concept of MSP Radio and the... Yep. podcasts and all the different arms that you're doing, because I want to help give people a good clear picture of what it is you're doing.
Yeah. So for me, the idea is, hey, like I want to put forth thought provoking ideas and perspectives that can be consumed by solution providers and, you know, that they get relevant, useful information out of. And I keep asking the question, so why do you care? That's my okay. kind of thing. And so for me, I wanted to start with there's lots of great opportunities to have these conversations in kind of casual ways. So for example, this is a great podcast. Why am I on here having this conversation? You talked to lots of really interesting people. I even looked and said, I don't really need to do yet another Talking Heads podcast, right? I won't add value. But what I could do is I said, let me start looking at the moves of companies and the moves of technology companies and start putting some perspective around. So that's the Business of Tech podcast. It's a daily 5-minute news podcast that I do every single business day, where I'm looking at a couple of stories each day and I'm putting my why do you care angle on it to say, if you're in the technology services business, why does this move matter to you? And that's the thinking. So for example, you know, on the pod that dropped today, I talked about I had four stories on today. I'm going to just quickly talk on two to give you a perspective. The first was I actually talked about Amazon and some of their moves on the idea of tracking the new social distancing stuff the cameras that they're putting on, right. Using augmented reality. And look, I've had a bunch of stories recently around opportunities to sell technologies. I actually think there's a really interesting question around, are we normalizing surveillance for people? And we need to have conversations with our customers about the normalization of surveillance. Are they comfortable with that? Do they want to send that signal to their employees? And that's a real weighty business value proposition. And by the way, I talked about that in a minute. Like I gave you the summary of the story. I gave you a link to something you needed for more research and the idea of, hey, let's talk surveillance on this one. Microsoft put out a case study on all of the things they did to pivot their Azure cloud computing around COVID-19. Super interesting case study. Again, covered some of the highlights of it, what things you might be interested in knowing about. And then that the lens of, if you're in tech services, that's a really great case study on the kinds of things of crisis management and the way you listen to customers. So here's some perspective. Here's a couple of the things they did. If you want more information, here's how you dig in. Whole episode's 5 minutes, and you're getting super bits of value every single day to take back to your business. That's the core idea.
Okay. And with these stories, now, to some, they may seem like, you know, a spot here and a spot there. do you have a target audience within IT that you're going after, or is it just here's the things that are happening in IT that you find interesting?
Yeah, I think about it from the lens of if you're a company that delivers technology services,
okay,
you deliver services around the use of technology. That's who I think of when I think about my listener. Note I'm careful about that. That includes MSPs, right? But it also includes break-fix guys, that includes consultants, includes anybody in that space of technology services. Because I think it's wider than just, hey, I'm an MSP and I do, you know, I do my thing. I actually think we talk about dismissive of break-fix. I actually think there's value there. There's a portion of the market that is only going to get serviced by break-fix, but they need to know about the kinds of issues that are coming up, particularly about, I know we're going to talk about an issue about right to repair it. Like that totally falls into break-fix guys. They care about that stuff. You know, technology services, if you're a consultant, you may move into this space and not do infrastructure anymore. You may only focus on like business value consulting with technology, like helping with applications. I think about those guys too. These are all different kinds of tech services. So that's who I think of. If you're delivering technology services, I want to make sure that my stuff is through that lens.
Okay. So you throw out these podcasts every morning or every day. And I've listened to most of them. I'm not up to speed. Heard today's yet. But what happens next? I mean, I assume that somebody probably sends you a quick little note saying, hey, Dave, nice story. Where do we go from here? Or, hey, can I talk to you about this? Or
it's all of that. And sometimes people will say like, I thought about what you said and you're totally wrong. And I love okay. those because I love that, because if I've given somebody an idea and they say, I thought about it and I've come up with a different, better idea and I'm going to go do it. I look and go, well, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want. I don't need to be right. I need to stimulate the thinking and you get some value out. I love to be challenged. So I always think about it and say, like, I want people to engage. I hear from people now, I get Dave, I want you to answer on this. What do you think about this? I had a listener that came to me and said, weigh in on Zoom. Like, where are you with Zoom and their moves with China? Like, I've been wrestling with what I'm thinking in, but I want to hear your line of thinking. So I rationalize, well, here's where my head's at. Like, this is what my perspective is on it. And I like to think, because where I'm at is that it's an independent position, right? I'm literally only invested in answering listeners' questions. I'm taking my perspective, and you can't hire Forrester or Gartner in a small technology services business. You can't have an analyst thinking for you, but I can answer your question. I can handle it for you. You know, and then that for me, it becomes things to talk about on the show, right? So listeners have been saying they want to do this. I did an editorial piece. I do these longer pieces, usually on the weekends, like a video and a longer podcast where I answer a listener question. Last weekend, somebody asked me, Dave, if you were starting an MSP today, what would it look like? And what market would you go after? So I did a whole analysis. Say, yeah. Okay, if I was starting an MSP today, which by the way, I don't want to do, but okay, like if I was to do it, here's where my head's at. Like, here's my line of thinking. These are the way that I would do it. This is the market I would go after. Here's my geography choices. Here's my tool choices. And here's why I made those choices. Because then you can analyze it. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. But if you're getting an opinion out of that, that gives you that insight you're looking for.
Well, that's the last one of yours that I listened to, and I actually had a bunch of notes on that. It was kind of funny because I thought, that should spark up some stuff. Because I know one of the things that you mentioned, that your tools would be cloud only.
Absolutely. Only 100% cloud.
And that you would focus a lot of your stuff around Intune for policy management.
Yep.
Which the Intune thing, I'm like, okay, I get that.
Yep.
Your core focus was going to be based on the line of business and making the customer happy first.
Yep, absolutely. I'm all about, from my thinking on this, is all about customer experience. And so I want the customer to love me because I made their business run a bit better. And I'm thinking about it. So to give you a little preview on it, you know, hey, I live in DC. I have experience in associations. Oh, and by the way, there's a ton of associations here. So for me, from a market perspective, it's like expertise plus location plus opportunity
right.
means that's the one I'm going on. you should use criteria like that for your business. So that, but in my case, it's okay, it's association. So I'm going to go find a great association management set of software that I can be the best implementer at. I'm going to be a ninja at this stuff. and I'm going to figure that bit out, because they're going to love me because of that. If I'm bringing them more revenue, if I'm bringing them new membership, if I'm driving the business with technology from that perspective, they're going to love it and they're going to eat it up. And then everything else, I just go like, okay, well, I need a network that works around it. So that's, I need to do that in order to keep my competition from attacking me. But that's not my, you'll know here. No, that's not my focus, right? My focus is this line of business, super high-end business value stuff. I'm doing the other stuff because I just want to keep everybody else out of my customer's base. Like, I don't want them poking around.
Right.
And that's a different approach, right? That's not the way the typical IT provider may have come up, who's been doing this for a long time. And I note that in the piece that, like, as you walk through my line of business, this is a business that has no legacy. But it makes for a super interesting competitor to think about, right? That maybe they're out there. Maybe that guy, this Dave version of an MSP, maybe they're out there and came up with this idea too.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, I have to struggle with that sometimes because, of course, a lot of MSPs are trying to force customers into their model, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I know that there's the big push to, you know, move everything to the cloud and no servers on-prem, but I'm still making a nice living because my customer base have to have servers on-prem. That's the way that their industry is. Their industry has not moved to the cloud. Now, am I planning for it? Am I thinking about it? Am I looking for those vendors in their industry that are moving to the cloud? Yes. But in the meantime, I can't force my customers to go where there's no path.
This is an interesting debate, and because again, me, my little agile MSP, right? This fictional competitor, I have no legacy, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come in and I'm going to go, oh, I can totally take you to the cloud. I can totally take you to the cloud. And by the way, the DoD is in the cloud. So is every major government agency, every security level, the CIA is in the cloud.
Yeah.
Don't tell me your industry can't do it. The spooks are in there. Watch me do it. And that's a really powerful set of statements, right? Now I get it. You are disrupting the innovator's dilemma, right? You're disrupting your own business in order to look at that. But the question that was posed to me is if I was starting today, what would it look like? And it's like, well, it would look like this little aggressive cloud only business that's going to come in and make a huge mess for everybody else.
Which, you know, I think a lot of MSPs are looking at that. They are looking at going completely cloud. They want to be there. The question that I was going to go to next is, you made a comment, and I wish I'd recorded it, but you made a comment about not focusing on ticket management.
Yeah.
Which is the whole premise of MSP right now, right?
Yeah. So here's my basic idea, right? So everybody's obsessed with the ticket, right? They're totally obsessed with the ticket. But I think when I think about what the customer wants, customer doesn't care, right? They just don't care. And this idea of the ticket is so overwhelming that I think it gets in the way of helping customers. And so my core premise is that I'm going to work on, we're probably going to, in my little fictional MSP, I'm not saying I'm giving up on ticketing or documentation, but my big mantra is I'm just not going to beat my staff up so much on tracking time, because I am going to really focus on outcome-based delivery, right? I'm going to charge my customers that my guarantee to you is we're going to help you grow your business 5% a year based on this technology implementation. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to take care of your network, and here's we're going to keep you at a running rate of, you know, we're going to keep it down to no impact more than, you know, a couple of hours or something. We're going to figure out some business measurement, but I'm not going to beat my techs up on tracking every little moment.
Right.
I'm going to worry about just making sure, are the customers really happy? And I'm going to use a technology like a customer management system, like a Salesforce, like a Zendesk, where I'm super focused on just like making my team really hands-on, right? Like, can they chat? Can they work with people? And I'm going to have the system track as much of this as I can. right? If you think about all your interactions with large management groups where you're doing this kind of chat, all that stuff gets logged, right? Like it's all searchable, it's all indexable, and it's all just going to automatically happen. And I'm just going to sort of remove this element of making all my texts constantly log every single minute. And I'm just going to go, I got all the chat logs. It's close enough.
Right.
Right. And so, Rex Frank at C-Level actually asked me a great question in one of the conversations. And he's like, well, how do you check profitability, Dave? Like, how do you, if you're not tracking it? I was like, well, the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to just sort of look and go based on volume. Right. If I've got like a gazillion chats against a particular customer, I probably have a problem. right. And I'm just going to look at it that way. Do I need time? Sure. Maybe I can be 5% more precise on my measurement of profitability by tracking time. But what do I get for that 5%? I get angry engineers, right? Engineers that just hate and are constantly fighting me on timesheets and logging. And if I can just make the systems track everything, like maybe the system will just record their remote sessions and their chats. And if we need to figure out what happened, well, we'll just go to the videotape.
To replay.
Right. We'll just go to that. And yeah, maybe my metrics are not quite as precise on every move my engineers make, but you know what they are? Happier. And they're spending more time working with people and engaging. And they're really thinking about, like, they're not bound. They can just work with people and I can hire better engineers and I can spend my time and say, you know, I'm going to super focus on culture and I'm going to make sure these engineers are like totally empowered to like be awesome. And they're going to have all these tools that just record all this stuff for them. You know, they just record, it records the remote session and we keep it for 30 days and then we log the volume and we're done. You know, and that's our way of doing it. And we're going to make sure that our tools are doing as much as possible to document things automatically. And I'm going to be super focused on data protection and policy management. Like, we're all so worried about protecting and making sure every like computer runs right. I just want to make sure their data doesn't get lost. Something breaks on the computer, wipe it, start over. Like, just don't even bother. like keep the system super lightweight and like let people just bring stuff, you know, and if some particular end customer becomes too problematic, I'm going to make the customers buy them new gear, like, and just replace it.
I thought you were going to say raise the price.
Well, because by the way, we're going to be able to charge a premium because I'm going to be showing them every single month that they're getting 5 or 7 or 10% growth to their revenue or their membership growth. They're going to spend whatever I ask them to because they're going to go, well, you're driving 5% growth, 10% growth, 15% growth. Of course I'm going to spend that money. Yeah. like I spend that money you've been delivering and you build that way. And that for me, and it's a very disruptive way of thinking all of this stuff, right? Like it's just, and look, am I sitting here going, is this perfect? Yeah. It's a thought exercise, right? Where like, have I sat down and completely designed this business? No, of course not. I haven't launched it yet. You know, that's not the way I'm going, but I want you to think that way. Why are we obsessed with the ticket? No customer asked us to obsess about the ticket, right? No customer asked us to do that.
Nobody's asked me. I don't do tickets.
Exactly. So Marvin, you're right there with me, man. You're right there with. But that's the idea, right? So that's the idea. Is I don't want to obsess about time because I think it's costing me too much in terms of my management.
It was interesting. So that was more than 5 minutes.
I know. You get me going, sir. You get me going.
All right. So that's just a snippet of what you do on the Business of Tech podcast. So,
yep. I know. Are you laughing? By the way, everybody, that was just one episode. that's just one episode we're talking about.
All right. So the rest of MSP Radio, I know that you're out there doing some other stuff. So what are the other things that you're doing?
Yeah, so I also do a show called Killing It. I do that with Carl Polachek and Ryan Morris. A lot of people know Carl from all of his books. He's a prolific writer and speaker. Ryan Morris is a well-known channel researcher, came from helping launch the Institute for Partner Education and Development, and does a ton of sales thinking and the way that the industry grows. We do a weekly show. It's 30 minutes. It's three guys, three topics, 30 minutes. And the idea is to, again, talk about things in different ways. We're not talking, say, again, we're not doing sales and marketing. We're talking about, like, why do you care about drones? Like, what's going on with drones? We have a running bet on will a burrito be delivered to my house via wheeled drone on the ground or flying drone through the air? Mm. Because, you know, as we're looking at the spaces, like, what makes the most sense? We talk about robotics and what we think the impact of those are on business processes. We talk about privacy and what we think is going on with the big social media companies. Like, really, again, these ideas of exploring these big ideas. And then you get three guys debating it each week who you hear are different perspectives on that. And we definitely do not always agree on these. But the cool thing is we're all looking for the same outcome. We're trying to figure out, like, how would we solve this problem if we are a tech services business?
All right. So Killing It podcast.
Killing It or Killing IT, depending over the way. It's intentionally the way you want to say it either way.
I don't think you want to say Killing IT, but.
Exactly. But that's the idea, is we're trying to disrupt these old school ideas. For example, I've even gone so far as I've declared managed services dead on the podcast. Just the
really?
What a useless term. Every vendor misuses it. Nobody knows what managed services means. Just stop. Like, it's just over. but it's an interesting idea, right? If every vendor is using it and none of them know what it means, and then they all train their salespeople to use the phrase MSP, and half of them don't even know what MSPs are, is it actually useful anymore?
You know, there should be a discussion on that, because I've always struggled with, should I call myself an MSP or not? Because, to be honest, I really never considered it, but probably 65% of my business is quote unquote managed services.
You know? So I laugh and go, we should have this conversation. Well, we've had it on Killing It. And I say it's useless. I don't think you should call yourself a managed services provider. You're in the tech services business.
All right.
It's all your customers care about. They don't care if you're managed services or cloud services or X as a service or whatever stupid acronym we've come up with.
Well, but there's the new MSSP now. You know, everything's going to be security as a service soon.
Right. And so that's all garbage, too. Like, it's like, you can say, I've got total opinions on this. And it's so fun to debate it, because the idea is I mean, I think we're putting the wrong lens on it. Again, do your customers care if you're an MSSP or an MSP? Are you solving their problems? They have security problems. They want to talk to you about security.
Right.
Does it matter if you're doing it under the guise of an MSP or MSSP? Who cares? Just go talk to them about the services they need. And these are the kinds of ideas, again, that we're exploring.
All right. I'm going to go off script here.
Please bring it on.
Do you feel more free in stating your opinions now?
Oh, can anybody tell? Well, look, I mean, everyone asks me this to a certain degree. And let me tell you why I'm going to market the way that I am. I actually think there's super high value in somebody who's expressing an open, honest opinion that you can leverage for something, right? I hope your listeners are going, even if they're yelling, going, Dave's wrong, I got to be called an MSP, that you've got a reason, right? You've got a reason, you've got a line of thinking. I may have challenged it, but you are then going, nope, I'm right. I know what I'm doing. Or you're listening going, ooh, maybe there's something to that. I laugh and go, my business model is literally, I'm signing up Patreons. Like, I like people, people can throw me a couple of bucks every month and they can ask anything they want. They get opinions. They get part of the conversations. And I look at it and say, if I'm just literally going to the people that I'm serving and saying, is there value here? You can subscribe. And my model is pay what you want. And literally, it says on my Patreon site, just pay what you want. Pay what you think it's worth. I hope that there are companies that are getting tons of value from what I'm saying, and they'll give more generously because they're getting that much value. And somebody who's starting up, say, you know what, I don't have very much. You know, I'm a small little baby business, but I'm getting value, and they give too. And I love each and every bit of those engagements, the people that I'm talking to. And then I freely admit that I sell old school ads on my podcasts. The reason is, if you're a vendor, you want to get attention from people that are like that. You need to say something. And sometimes you just need to say like 30 seconds worth of stuff. I don't need to wrap it in a giant webinar that you guys all know is all hiding the advertisement at the end. Right? I just need to tell you about my thing.
Yeah.
Here's my thing. Here's my value. If you're interested, check it out. That has actual real value.
It does.
Right? It really does. And they want to talk to people that are engaged and interested in the content. So for me, that's my model. So it's actually super important to me that I just have listener trust. You know that I'm saying what I believe in and where I'm coming from, and you hear my rationale, and that for me is the why I'm enjoying what I'm doing, because for me, it's such a pure little way of going to market with this idea of, I just want to provide some value. That's what I want to do.
And the people have the choice, you know, if you like it, contribute, right. You know,
contribute.
Ask the questions and be willing to engage in right. conversation, even if it's contrary to what you think.
Exactly. That's the whole point. And it's okay to have, we're smart people. We're technicians, we're engineers, we're salespeople. We want to do interesting things. And there's not one way to solve this problem, but that's my core idea. So it's a super simple media idea, right? Is I'm just going to produce some great content, and I'm going to put it out there for the community. And I'm smiling, I'm crossing my fingers, the community wants it. But the cool thing is that it's already been a great swell. Like, I mean, it's an exciting time, as any baby business is in its early days, getting great response from the community. I've got some amazing Patreons that support me. We have cool conversations in the Patreon group for my Patreons. We've got, I'm having great larger conversations with vendors. I'm getting vendors calling me up and go, we just want to like hear your idea. Cool. I'll give you some opinions. Here you go. You know, and the openness of that is that we can just have those communications. You can get some opinions and then you can leverage them. I hope everybody is, I really do hope everyone is listening and getting some value and then going out and killing it, making money off of it.
Right. Well, I can tell you this. One of the things that kept me drawn to listening is not only am I getting snippets of news, which I've tried to listen to other podcasts to get my news. I try to get on, you know, the Google sure. and stuff. And it's like, it's dry. It's, you know, 5 minutes in, you know, I'm not listening anymore because they're going in a way that doesn't matter to me. And yours, at least, will give me snippets. And then you ask the question, why should you care?
Right.
And I can be like, oh, maybe I should care. And one of those topics is something that's been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it's not big in the state of Florida, at least not in IT. It's big in another industry, the insurance industry and the auto body repair, because that's one of the big things down here. Florida, you know, we believe in the wild, wild west when it comes to
to business. You guys do. You guys really do.
But the idea of the right to repair is something that, and I've heard about it, and I've not really paid attention to it. And it wasn't until I went back and listened to your podcast, I think it was back in February, mm-hmm. where you brought it up, and that kind of like, oh, wait a minute. And now I've seen some other notes and podcasts and things on it. So before we get into that, can you describe from your perspective what right to repair actually is?
Yeah. So the right to repair, and I totally want to say that for me, this, what was exciting about this was a listener driven, this was a listener driven topic. Listener came to me and said, Dave, you need to look into this. I want you to understand you. I want you to understand it, and I want you to weigh in.
Okay.
So the idea of right to repair is that in technology, in the very broad sense, literally down to you talking about cars and because they're technology too, right? So yeah. Your vacuum cleaner, your car, your cell phone, your computer. Traditionally, we've always owned this thing fully. You would buy something, you would own it, and then you would have all of the rights of ownership around it. But with the introduction of software, you are licensing the software rather than owning the software.
Correct.
That's clearly defined, as that's why we all have end user license agreements. We sign up that we have a license to use the software. But in many cases, most of the cases we're talking about, there's still a physical component to the thing that we own. Think about your cell phone. Your cell phone's a great example of this, right? It's a physical brick of electronics and glass and plastic that also then runs software. It's clear you own the plastic and the glass and all of those, but you only license the software. But if something happens to the device and you need to repair it, do you have the right to repair it? And where does that right stop and start? That's the issue behind right to repair. So for many of us that are traditionally have thought about this, we've always assumed we have the right to repair. But as we've moved into this world of software and where it's not just software, but it's subscription software and it's licensed and it's up, do we truly have enough rights to be able to do the repair? I look at this also and say, like, I'm a retro video game guy. Anybody that knows my stuff or see my videos and see the background, I always think about the fact that, well, I own my old school Atari or my Nintendo. Of course I have the right to repair it. But do I have the right to repair my Xbox? But now my iPhone is also a gaming machine. Do I truly have the right to repair it? And where this is there's a tension here, because a lot of the manufacturers of these companies, on not just in our traditional IT space, but even in the a vacuum cleaner, like Dyson vacuums,
right,
would love to take away the ability for you to have that right to do physical repairs and make themselves the only authorized repair shop that could be out there. Apple is clearly moving on this space, right? Apple has got a very strict way of engaging in the way they authorize parts and authorize components and authorize dealers and their independent repair. I mean, they are really coming aggressively after this. And so this is the core idea, is where does your right to repair allow, how far does it allow you to go? How does it allow you to tinker? What is it allowed to physically repair screens? Where does that start and stop? That's the core issue.
So going back to the concept you mentioned about, you know, software and it's moving to the subscription model.
Right.
And, you know, Microsoft being the one easy example, even Windows, the actual Windows OS is a license.
Yep.
And you stick a, you know, COA sticker on the machine and right, that license is supposed to live with that machine.
Yep.
Well, now they've got Windows 10 where it's embedded into the BIOS of machines.
Yep.
You've got Office 365, which is a license, which is, mm-hmm, you know, your Word, Excel, your Outlook. And the question is now, what about your mail? I mean, do you have the right to your mail when you're right, paying a monthly subscription? And,
yeah,
you know, Microsoft 365 is moving to a subscription. The phones, most of us don't actually own our phones outright because we're paying monthly. Because phones are now $1,000.
Right.
You know, and we're paying 30, 40, 50 bucks a month.
It's an interesting subtlety, too, because you could also be in a payment plan to buy or a payment plan to lease. So it could be different. So, for example, I always go on the payment plans to buy. So I actually own my device at the end of my payment term to buy, but right, you could choose the lease option. It's a very complicated space, right? So this is why there's a debate. Is that because of the new complexity to it, there is a debate to be had. Right.
So mentioning debate, and here's where I really got engaged. So
yep,
just in the last, 2 weeks, I read a story about a repair store in Norway that,
yep,
has been in a dispute with Apple because the store was repairing Apple products.
Yep.
They were using used and refurbished parts. Mm-hmm. And Apple came in and said, those are not authorized. So you can't do that. And they were in a 3-year fight? And basically now the store, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Apple.
Right.
And now the store has to pay Apple and destroy, mm-hmm, all the parts that they were using to do repairs. So, yep, when you tell the story and you say, why should you care? Well, I care because I repair parts.
Right,
you for computers. Parts. And if HP or Dell or somebody's going to come to me and say, you can't do that anymore, well, that affects my business.
Right, and let's observe, in this particular instance, so I disagree with the ruling in Norway, but that's what courts do, right, is they reconcile the disagreements. But then the next step is well, there could be new legislation.
Right.
You can change the law, right? You could write the law in a new, different way. And so we get into this area that we, as an industry, don't typically talk a ton about, particularly at our level, right? These you know, small, mid-sized organizations. But we have really a vested interest in what's happening with these technology laws that are generally getting pushed around by very big companies, right? That very big companies are using their armies of lawyers, but it's affecting us in our businesses. And if we wait till the end where it's all been ruled, we're going to have exactly what happened here, where it gets ruled against us.
Right.
So we have to get involved.
So I have a question because now I'm a member of CompTIA.
Yep.
They were lobbying against right to repair
protection laws, right? They were let's be very precise.
Yes, yeah, they backed away, they were
lobbying at the state level, particularly in the U.S. on several laws, including you cited SB 5799, and that's up in Washington state. They were working to lobby at the state and local level because some of their members were pushing them to do so. Now through efforts of community members, of which I am one, certainly I'm not going to say I'm the only person on this, they reversed their decision and moved to no longer lobbying at all. They are simply not taking a side in their lobbying efforts. So that's a good first step if you're from our position.
Right.
But they were going in front of state legislatures, and they were saying, you know, hey, we're CompTIA, we have this membership organization, we're the IT industries organization, and we are making a petition on the side of blocking any right to repair protection laws because of what our members believe. They have now, as I said, we want to be very clear, they have stopped lobbying on this position. But I from my perspective, I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware that these moves that they were making, because some members, in their advocacy group had been pushing for that.
It's an interesting conversation, is because do we want organizations like CompTIA doing that for us? First of all, I mean, that's one question there.
It totally is. It's a very healthy question. And this is where, again, we're at the point of, hey, we have to ask the questions to even get started. We typically, as small business owners, have not spent a ton of time thinking about our industry as a larger whole and what regulations are good for it and what are bad for it. We probably haven't. We're busy running our businesses, right? Like, we all gotta. But this is stuff that's actually affecting us. This stuff is happening, and if we don't do something about it, we're just not going to be at the table to have these conversations at all. So you're exactly right. Like, what are we going to do? Are we going to get involved? Awareness is the first bit. You got to be aware of the problem.
Right.
Now we have to have these conversations of, okay, well, what do we think is the right thing to do? And then larger groups of us have to start coalescing around which are the right groups to be potentially lobbying on our behalf. Where do we want to have our voices heard? Do we do it on an individual level? Are we petitioning local lawmakers? Are we doing it at a more, state level, national level? Like, this is what organizations do, right? Like, and this is what activism is at some level. It's healthy to have these debates. I'm all for it, but we got to get started.
Right. So other organizations like the auto industry, have their regulation board, they kind of, I don't want to say self-regulate, because they have a bunch of government regulations imposed on them.
Yep.
But they all came together and said, okay, look, we're going to compose this, standardization, ourselves. IT industry doesn't have that.
No, and actually it's striking when you think about the lots of different industries that do. So I like to put them sort of into two buckets, the knowledge workers and and more physical workers. But if we think about doctors, so for example, doctors weren't always licensed, right? If we get go in the time machine and we go back to the Wild West, we could both hang out on our shingles, do whatever we wanted. We could perform surgery. But people decided that wasn't a great idea. the doctors came together and they built some standards and they figured out what they wanted to be tested on. And that became the board, and they became board certified. And then that became a legal requirement to practice medicine. You see the same thing on lawyers. You know, back in the day, anybody could hang out their shingle or get the crown support if we're going back to the Middle Ages or something along those lines. But again, same idea, coalesced around the idea of the bar. The bar became institutionalized by government, and we have a system put together for that. You see it in other industries. We see it in, you can make the argument that that is what licensing businesses are, is one very basic level, right? So lots of the government license gives you a business license to operate something. If you've got physical space, you're probably used to having to have a license, and maybe health inspectors if you're a restaurant. If you're in you mentioned the automobile industry, they have a certification,
right,
that oftentimes they have to have. They've got, it's also done through some of their vendors. Let me observe that CompTIA's legacy started that way. Like CompTIA has their certifications like A+ because the manufacturers came together and said, we need a single way of knowing who are the right people that are doing repairs well. Let's create something like A+ and standardize across our bits. And that's how CompTIA started, was that idea of we're going to create some certifications. It's a great, important business for them. You could see that they are one route that would make a lot of sense for our industry to rally around. They're certainly not the only ones. There's other ways this could be done. But you can see from the historical precedent that there is an opportunity here to do this kind of stuff. And we as the collective industry have got to figure out how we want to do this.
Right, because if you think about it, so, you know, while CompTIA may have certifications, that's nothing legal in the sense that businesses have to hire a certified tech.
Correct. Or the other way is that the vendors could only sell to a certified tech. There's lots of different ways,
right,
that you could build that self-policing system. But right now, of course, we don't have it, right? Anybody with a credit card can generally become a technology services company.
Interesting. So I know that usually the barrier has been that business license,
yep,
you know, where a lot of, you know, you have to either, you know, become a LLC or, you know, incorporate or something, at least to operate. But I know that they have talked about the idea of registering MSPs.
Mm-hmm. It's a discussion. I did some digging, and there's another set of stories I talked about in the state of Louisiana. They reacted to all of the cybersecurity problems that they've had. And the Secretary of State of Louisiana is talked about, and he talked about it on my show, talked about how he's looking at defining the terms MSP and MSSP, and then having businesses start registering in his state. And the reason, and I observe he is a pro-business Republican that is doing this. And the reason is, he says, I don't understand the space. I don't know who's even out there doing what. If I'm going to have any smart conversations about regulation, I at least need to know who the people are.
Right.
You know, and his statement and on the show was, you know, if the industry isn't going to self-regulate, we're going to have to step in because this is critical for people's businesses.
Right. So this is going to shift a little bit, but it still kind of is in the same realm that things like this could disrupt the MSP world.
Oh, absolutely.
But companies are already starting to do that. I mean, in a sense, you know, anybody that has a certified repair, you know, like Apple has their independent repair provider program.
Yep. Right.
Samsung is now starting their services, and they could, in a sense, lock us out of doing anything with their products. That's all something that could be disruptive. I mean, what if HP and Dell decided that, you know, only certified HP people can, you know, purchase, repair, and service and maintain?
Yep.
Does that mean we can't put our RMM products on those systems?
This is the debate, Marvin. This is the debate. And so for anybody that's out there listening that sort of says, oh, this regulation stuff doesn't matter to me, yeah, these are the scenarios that are possible. You know, that they could move this way. Now, I'm not necessarily in that particular instance. I'm not sure that an HP or a Dell or somebody would be financially motivated to block, you know, software deployments or stuff like that. But that's not to say that it's not possible.
Right.
And particularly if there ends up being some kind of pressure, or they're doing it from a, maybe they want to protect that, you know, that stack and that repair bit. You can see that maybe at some point, you know, they're moving towards only authorized, only us can get access to the right parts. We could be entirely left out of the conversation if we're not engaged on this right to repair issue.
Right. All right. And let's move to one other kind of, when you and I had our personal chat a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how we both have fared through the COVID-19.
Yeah.
So in your podcast notes that you've been taking, do you have anything that you see as, you know, whether they're trends or changes that are going to stick based on COVID-19?
So I always start my conversations with it by saying, I am very focused on the survival of solution providers during this time. And I am far more aggressive on my thinking about how difficult this is going to be than I think a lot of commentators out there. Hmm. I think 2020 is going to be a rough, choppy year. And I think 2021 is not far behind it. And I am advising solution providers to assume troubled times. Assume this is going to be hard.
Okay. You know, I got to ask why.
Well, because all the data tells me that. I put aside all of the optimism surveying, right?
Because
you're constantly, everyone's running all these polls. Oh, tons of solution providers expect Q4 to be much better. Okay, great. That's an opinion. I have one too. That's an opinion about direction. When I look at the data about what happens in conventional recessions, for example, if you haven't, I'm going to keep talking about this resource because it's fantastic. Service Leadership has put out their Rapid Recovery Guide, and it is a fantastic 57-page document with like a 20-minute video over doing it that gives all kinds of great advice for financial fitness during this time. They modeled the impact of the 2008 recession, what that looked like against 2019 numbers going into 2020 to try and project out. Revenues don't recover till 2024 for most solution provider businesses.
Really?
It takes a long time for this to come back. Then you've got, if you look at the Forrester data, Jay McBain's putting out some great information. Jay is talking about, he's got three scenarios that he look at, and the 60% probability main one talks about 25% of solution providers going out of business during this time. That's just scary data, right? And then I look at the general financial data and I go, you know, this many Americans, if I'm just thinking about the American market, this many Americans unemployed, this is going to have rippling effects through the economy. You cannot tell me that everything is going to be sunshine and rosy at the end of the year magically when the economy has taken this much of a hit. Hmm. And by the way, I talk about all of this sort of saying, I look forward to being wrong. Like, if I'm wrong on this, I will eat crow. Because that's good for everybody. But if I'm right and I warn people to plan this way, I've protected businesses and I can sleep at night based on that. Let's also just project out, right? We know there's a ton of the economy that is deferring payments,
right,
on mortgages, on credit cards, on cars. That all comes due in September. And by the way, I haven't even talked about virus resurgence and all of this. I'm just literally looking at the economy stuff.
Okay, resurgence. We haven't finished with it yet.
Exactly, Marvin. Exactly. You cannot tell me that this is going to be just bounce back. That is hopeful optimism. And man, I hope it's right. But the data doesn't tell me that. The data tells me be super aggressive on thinking this is troubled waters. Now, that doesn't mean stop investing. That doesn't mean stop doing things. That doesn't mean cower in your house and do nothing. But it does mean that you need to plan that this is going to be rough. I did a video that talked about some exercises and planning in this. Have you run the numbers on a 30% impact to your monthly recurring revenue and what that means to your business? What's 30? If I take 30% away, what does that mean to your business? Are you prepared for that? Because that might happen.
You know, that's an interesting thought, because it's now going on, is it 2 years, 3 years, 2.5 years. Yep. When I fired my biggest customer.
Yep.
They were 30% of my business.
Yep.
And I had to obviously adjust, but I did okay. And I wonder how many people can do that now, like you said. And yep. And this would be not by choice.
Oh no, this is distinctly not by choice. Like I am not gloom and doom. Oh my God, life is miserable. Like, I mean, what I am is thinking how do I help solution providers protect themselves and survive during what I think is going to be a troubled time? I see all the data. I've explained it all to you. And by the way, it's all reinforced. You know, for example, let me just tell you, this is from yesterday's podcast. IT Glue put out some research, right? And they've said already around half of MSPs have seen monthly revenue decreases as a result of the pandemic. And more than a quarter saw their accounts receivable increase, showing more clients could not meet their contract deadlines to pay for services. And that's just in the initial waves. But by the way, same report, everyone's optimistic. Everything is going to be great. The IT Glue themselves, oh yeah, MSPs are totally resilient and they'll be just fine. Really? Really? Like, I hope they're right. I really genuinely do. I really desperately want to be wrong. But my job isn't to be, you know, to be giving advice that says everything is going to be fine. It's to give honest assessments based on data and what I think the right things to do are. And I have the advantage here of saying, if I'm right, I've protected your business. And if I'm wrong, you have strengthened yourself to be incredibly successful. My plan works, right? Like, my plan either gets you through the rough time, or I'm wrong and you are kicking tail and taking aims, right?
Right.
I like that position. My pride's not wrapped up in this. I really genuinely mean it. If in 6 months I'm totally wrong, I will eat crow happily, because I can stand here and go, I'm just trying to make sure that everybody gets through it.
All right. Well,
so that's my, then I do look at, you asked the question. So I always start my conversations with that, because I want to say, like, what do I think is going on behind that? Well, first, please address this bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this is actually, once you assume you're in a position to survive, this is actually a really interesting time to look at assumptions, because everything is being challenged. If we get in the DeLorean, right? We go back in time, but this time we only have to go back like 6 months. And we ask ourselves, hey, do you think like all of businesses could go work from home in like 2 weeks? Do you think like everybody could pivot that fast? And we'd all think you're crazy. There's no way that could happen, right? Like, all these businesses, they did it. They totally did it.
Yeah.
They did it in 2 weeks. And that is total testament to technology services companies and all of that engagement, right? It totally worked. How about if I said, hey, we're going to have, you know, and the conversation you kind of kicked off is, we're going to have thousands of people marching in the streets, and there's going to be a 28-point change in public opinion around Black Lives Matter in the course of 2 weeks. If I 6 months ago, would anybody have signed on to that bet? No.
Well, first of all, a lot of America wouldn't have even entertained the question.
Exactly.
So that would have been the first thing is, oh, that doesn't affect me. I'm not going to worry about it.
Yes, exactly.
And the rest of us would have been like, hasn't changed before. Why is it going to change now?
Exactly. And by the way, I'm not sitting here going like, rah, rah, everything is perfect. But what I'm observing is that 2 years worth of change in public opinion on just that issue happened in 2 weeks.
Yep.
That's just strikingly different. And what I look and say from a business perspective, from the conversation you asked, what's coming next? I think all assumptions are open for discussion right now. Like I think a lot of those legacy bits, if you want to try something, now is totally the time to do it. Now is totally the time to do it because everybody is open to new ideas. Everything is everybody's disrupted.
Well, as I say, our customers are looking at redoing their businesses. So we have to look at redoing ours to support them.
You know? Yep, exactly. And so that's, if you think about it from a business perspective, again, assuming my baseline of, hey, you've got to be in good shape, that's exciting, right? That means new ideas are really open. Your customers are ready to try stuff. I mean, they are open to these new ideas. And by the way, they need to pivot in a lot of cases. They're ready to try different things because they have to. You know, restaurants are trying crazy new ideas of completely pivoting their menus. Shopping is happening in a completely different way. Curbside pickups and shifts in the way that we engage from that perspective. Everyone's going online. People are doing parties in Zoom. We went from, again, 6 months ago when video calling was kludgy and didn't work to like a plethora of amazing tools that work really well in like a couple of months.
Right.
Like this can be a time of interesting change and you can really take advantage of that. But I also assume, like, by the way, assuming you're planning to make sure that you can navigate choppy waters. I'm not saying it's easy and I'm not sitting over here going like, there's opportunity everywhere and it's all amazing. Just sweep it all. This is hard work. This is really hard work because you're going to navigate the difficulty of the time and also identify and pivot into new opportunities. But that doesn't mean it's not out there.
That is true. So very true. All right. Glad I asked that question because that gave me a couple of things to reach out to some people and discuss again because we need that.
Well, and Marvin, thank you for the time because this is the point, right? The point is to come up with really to look at these issues and reexamine stuff with a critical eye, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and spout some vendor line or some, you know, perfect case study of, oh, everything is amazing. Just go out and sell. No, I want to examine reality and really deal with it on those levels. But that doesn't mean that I'm not also at the same time see opportunity and see the way you can go after it. I just want to be realistic about this. And I want to talk about the challenges in open, honest ways so that we can actually get to work on them.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to have your eyes opened and get into these discussions, you need to pay attention to the Business of Tech podcast. Because these are the things that he brings up each and every day in little snippets and asks the question, why should we care? So that's going to do it for that. Dave, I want to thank you very much. But before I thank you completely, I guess I should ask, is there anything that
we covered tons of stuff. And Marvin, I'm looking forward to ongoing conversations because this isn't just a one time. You know, you and I are going to have other conversations ongoing and I look forward to the listener conversations. Please reach out. You know, we talked about everything's available. All the links and such are at mspradio.com. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest place to find everything is there's links to the podcast. There's link to the YouTube channel. My email address is dave@mspradio.com. I'm on all of the socials. You know, feel free to reach out to me. I love these. You can tell I'm kind of fiery and passionate about this.
You stuff. Are.
I love the conversations. I love hearing from
people. And I love the fact that we can have discussions without worrying about, are we going to say the right thing or who we're going to piss off or things like that? Because I'm at the point where I care, but I don't care, if that makes sense.
It's about where you come from. If you're coming from a genuine place and you want to have that conversation, I think it's about that. And so, you know, I love solution providers. I love IT companies. I love services companies. And I think we can do such cool stuff, but that doesn't mean we don't have interesting challenges that we have to take on. let's take them on. Let's talk about them. Let's figure out what we can do. We're going to stumble. We're going to make mistakes. Let's reach out our hands to one another and help us on our way. This is that's part of the human experience. Let's do it together.
Let's do it together. All right. And when I hear another interesting tidbit in one of your podcasts, I'll reach out to you. We'll do this all over again.
I look forward to it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to another episode of Podnuts Pro. You've just enjoyed a show with Dave Sobel from MSP Radio. All of the links to things we discussed and where you can contact Dave will be in the show notes. Head over to podnuts.com and check out all the great shows that we've got over there. Look at the show notes and click on the links. Support Podnuts Pro by making your purchases on Amazon. Your price stays the same, but we will get a little bit of commission to keep doing these great and wonderful podcasts. That is going to do it for today. I look forward to talking to you guys again soon. And until then, holla.